I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Let's talk about living in a world of make-believe and why they lie the way we do. We'll talk about that tonight. Joy Pullman is here. Sarah Gonzalez is here. We are just stacked on top of stacked on top of stacked tonight on I'm Right. I'm going to talk to you about something. And it's going to sound like I'm talking to you about jobs and inflation and things like that, but I'm actually not. We're talking about something bigger. Remember, let's always try to zoom out. That way we understand the why. Why are we seeing what we're seeing? Don't try to understand a specific story or scandal of the day. Zoom out. Figure it out. Then you'll understand the one that comes tomorrow, right? That's the idea behind why we do what we do here on I'm Right. Why do they lie so brazenly, the communists? Why do they? Why do they call abortion reproductive rights? Or what, why do that? If you're Joe Biden, why get up and talk about jobs in the economy and brag?
We've created a record 15 million jobs since I came to office. There was any president, 15 million.
Why would you do that? Because he says that, and what happens inside of you? When you hear them do this, because they do it all the time, Joe Biden, his advisors, will make it about jobs and the economy and inflation right now. They'll get up and say, the jobs are great, man, so many jobs. Woo, inflation going way down. And someone like you, you hear that, and you just, raw, makes your head want to explode. How could they lie like that? Because you know what's happening right now. You're suffering. Everyone is. All the metrics are, honestly, they're not even horrifying. They're sad. Record credit card debt. Savings being emptied. Interest rates through the roof. People taking out second jobs. Extra hours. Not able to make ends meet. I got a heartbreaking email from a viewer a couple days ago. It was a man, and the subject of it was, I feel like a failure. And let me just, I'll paraphrase the email for you here. And I get many like this. Jesse, we can't make it. We're not making it. My wife has a job just so we can pay the mortgage. She missed a milestone of our new baby. The daycare workers did it. I can't work any more hours. I'm missing everything. We're not making it. And I have stacks and stacks and stacks of emails of people saying, Jesse, we're not making it. Jesse, I'm 65. I was retired. I've got to go back to work. Jesse, help. Jesse, what are we going to do? You know it's bad. I know it's bad. So why, if you're Joe Biden, why would you get up and tell people, this is going gangbusters, baby. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, let me explain why. Remember, when these people, when the communists speak, they're never, ever, 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 ever speaking to you. Ever. They're not trying to get you. They hate you. And they know, more importantly, that you hate them. They know that you are an informed person. You consume media of various kinds. I'm sure you watch this show. You probably watch other shows. You probably have podcasts, whatever you do. You're on news sites. You understand the news of the day. You're the hyper-informed, hyper-patriotic voter. You are the last person in the world these people are messaging to. So let's set you aside. I always have to remind myself of that. When they say something that makes my blood pressure vein pop out of my skull, I have to remind myself that they're not talking to me. So who are they talking to? If you're Joe Biden, why get up and say that? I mean, he knows it's a lie. I mean, my goodness, Jerome Powell got up, Federal Reserve Chairman, and as diplomatically as possible, kind of admitted, I mean, yeah, these are probably going to be revised.
You have payroll jobs still coming in strong, even though there's an argument that they may be a bit overstated.
A bit overstated. That is a nice way of saying they have lied about virtually every job slash CPI slash inflation report for the last 3 years, and they've lied through their teeth. They always revise it down a month or two later when nobody's paying attention. We did great, 400,000 jobs this month, woohoo! Couple months later, well, it was actually about 220, but they've done it every single time. They're lying about everything. But again, that doesn't explain the why. Why do they do this? If they're not talking to you, who are they talking to? Well, this is the hard part to accept and understand. A lot of people, a lot of people do not want to be free. That's an idea that you have. That's a very common way of thinking on the American right. I suffer from this as well. When I look at some brain-dead drone repeating these dirty commie talking points, and I say to myself, on top of everything else, what's wrong with you? Don't you want to be free? Don't you want to break free of all that? Get rid of these government chains and media chains. Start thinking for yourself, coming up with your own ideas, questioning authority. Don't you want to be free? And the truth is, that person, if they were hooked up to a lie detector test, would look me right in the eye and say, no, I don't want to be free. Many people throughout human history have no desire for freedom. They want safety and security, and they will sacrifice their freedom for the safety and security of just being taken care of. Me, I want to drive what I want to drive. I want to say what I want to say. I want to own and shoot every gun on the planet. I want to be free. I will no longer make the mistake of thinking the guy sitting next to me also does. The guy sitting next to me, your liberal Aunt Peggy, the reason she believes so many lies is her entire life, her religion, her entire worldview revolves around relying on these people to tell her where to go, what to drive, what to say, what language am I supposed to use, what am I not supposed to use. And if I just go along and follow along, then no, I'm not going to be free, but I don't want to be free. I want to be taken care of. The truth is, communists have always understood that there are large portions of every population, not just here in America. They don't have some burning desire for freedom. They have a burning desire for safety and security. So when your liberal Aunt Peggy walks into Thanksgiving running her fat mouth about how great the jobs report is, and you're looking at her just absolutely baffled because you know it's crap, and you think in your mind, she has to know that's a lie, right? She has to know that's a lie. No, you don't understand. You could hold up a piece of paper and show it to her face. These are the jobs numbers. It's a lie. It's a lie. Can't you see that? And she still would refuse to believe. Because if she did, if she accepted the truth you were giving her instead of the lies the dirty commies were selling her, if she did that, it wouldn't change how she feels about one story, the jobs. It would shatter her entire life, because her entire life is banking on these people telling her the truth. It would be like you or I waking up one day and being told, finding out, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, that God himself isn't real. Well, wait a minute. I'm 42. I believe in God. Many times as I've failed him, it's everything to my existence. That's why I raise my kids the way I raise my kids. It's why I do that. If God isn't real, well, then my entire 42 years on this planet comes apart, comes crumbling down like a house of cards. If your liberal Aunt Peggy doesn't accept the latest lie she's been told from these people, then her entire life is ruined. And so these people, they not only build up a world of make-believe for themselves, they actually demand their politicians and media people continue to build that world for them. You've seen a new saying, a new phrase over and over and over again out of the left about Donald Trump sending them to camps, I'm worried if Trump gets elected, he's going to send me to a camp. What if I get sent to camps? What if I get sent to a camps? Rachel Maddow said it. AOC went out there and said, Trump's going to send me to camps.
What happens to you if Donald Trump wins? What do you do? What's your first move?
I mean, it sounds nuts, but like, I wouldn't be surprised if this guy threw me in jail. I take him at his word. I take him at his word. I take him at his word when he says that he's going to round up people.
Of course, anyone who knows anything about Trump knows that's ridiculous. He's not some right-wing dictator, Francisco Franco type. Trump's a very moderate Republican, a fairly pragmatic type, a businessman guy, just kind of wanted to do some deals. But they understand they have to pretend like he's Hitler slash Mussolini to create that world of make-believe so liberal Aunt Peggy will crawl naked across a mile of broken glass to vote against him. And liberal Aunt Peggy, she wants to live in that world. And you could, look, you could show her this, what I'm about to show you. You could show her, you could say to her, Trump's not going to put anyone in a camp. He was just president for 4 years and didn't do anything remotely like that. But Democrats do want to put us in camps, and then you could show her this, and she still wouldn't believe it.
Putting it all back together again after we've gone through this MAGA nightmare and re-educating, basically, which that sounds like a rather... a re-education camp. I don't think we really want to call it that. I'm sure we can find another way to phrase it.
Oh, sure, that's the problem, lady. It's the phrasing, not the fact that she thinks you and me need to go to a camp. And you could show all that to liberal Aunt Peggy, and she'll never understand, and she'll never accept it because she doesn't want to be free. In a weird way, she wants to be lied to. And Joe Biden and the dirty commies around him understand that. So when she rolls into your 4th of July party that I'm sure you already have scheduled, and she starts talking about how great the jobs market is, now you'll understand why. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Sarah Gonzalez has some things that are going to make you uncomfortable, and she's going to join us to do that next. But I know that you're going to be able to handle it. And you know why I know you're going to be able to handle it? Because you got a great night's sleep last night, didn't you? I did. You can probably tell. Once again, I'm bouncing off the walls over here. That happens when you're knocking out 8-9 hours a night, courtesy of Dream Powder. This stuff, man. I have never been able to take things to sleep. I've traditionally been a pretty good sleeper, but like everyone else, you know, once a week, twice a week, I can just tell I'm not going to sleep. I got stuff on the brain. And if I take something, I'm dead the next day. I wake up so groggy. It doesn't matter how long I sleep. I'm just miserable. This is the only thing I've ever taken in my life that doesn't do that at all. Because it's all natural stuff. It's melatonin and other things. It's just a cup of hot chocolate. I warm up a little glass of milk, pour some Dream Powder in there, sip on it as I'm going to bed, and just gone. And it's glorious. Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. That gets you 40% off. Not making that up. All right? We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today we're going to win the great state of Michigan. I am ready to secure our democracy, to take Michigan from worst to first in transparency.
We are in the critically important swing state of Michigan.
Since Trump won the state in 2016, Michigan has completely overhauled its election system.
Is it a mess? You right, it's a mess.
If I lived in Michigan and I moved to the state of Texas, would I still be registered to vote in the state of Michigan?
You would be.
Do you know you don't have to show any documentation whatsoever to register to vote?
Michigan Senate passed a bill that would bar local officials from investigating fraud.
Is it intentional? Is it by design?
Well, I don't know. Secretary of State, duly elected, won't give you the time of day?
They have a Secretary of State who is ideological, has a pedigree in the far left, is very intelligent and very militant, and doesn't want to do anything about the problem.
As a moderate, I would like it to be fixed. And they don't fix it.
You need to understand something. Secretary of State Benson actually believes she's doing the right thing. That's how dangerous it is.
Voter fraud? I thought that's just something those crackpot conspiracy theorists believe. Joining me now, one of those crackpots, my friend Sarah Gonzalez with The Blaze, host of Unfiltered on The Blaze. Sarah, what are you, some tinfoil on your head? Wingnut Democrats only believe in straight-up legal elections. After all, that's why they don't want you to have to show ID.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I know that's what they tell us, that this is just some crazy right-wing conspiracy theorist. And you'll notice, Jesse, whenever they fight back against what we have seen to be clear-cut cases of voter fraud, they will always say, well, there's no evidence of widespread voter fraud. Well, I would say that if you guys are gaming the system, I don't care how many votes are fraudulent, we should investigate that, we should uncover it, and we should change it. And so we went to the state of Michigan and we tried to talk to Secretary of State Benson. She didn't want to talk to us. She sent us a statement after we were, we had finished our time there. But we're talking about a woman who in 2018, she became Secretary of State, but she was former SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, which you and I both know is a bad organization when it comes to, how radicalized these people are. So she came from the SPLC and she actually is Soros funded. She is getting money. She is part of Soros's Secretary of State project. So she comes in radicalized on day one. And the way that she has transformed Michigan's election, making it far less safe, of course, far less secure, is really, really, really dangerous, especially if it is replicated, statewide across the country.
That friggin' Soros is a crafty bugger, isn't he? Okay, so look, you made the show. I didn't make the show. The floor is yours. Tell us what all you discovered in the critical swing state of Michigan, the one Trump really needs to win.
Yeah, so they've done a couple different things since Secretary Benson has been put in charge. One of them is a ballot referendum. This is Proposition 3 that is same-day registration. So, Jesse, you can go to the polls, register on the same day. You show up, you're not registered. You can register to vote, and then you can register to vote without showing photo ID. So essentially, you can check a bunch of boxes, say that you pinky promise, you super duper pinky promise that you are this person and that you do have the right to vote, and then you can vote on that same day. There is another proposition, Proposition 2. This was passed in 2022 that received $24 million in funding from left-wing organizations like Open Society, which, of course, is also George Soros affiliated. And this particular proposition was 2,500 words long, but on the ballot, it was less than 100 words. And so they confused people. They put all this money into advertising, trying to tell people that this would make their elections more secure. But what it actually did was it gave Michigan the constitutional right to vote by mail, which is, of course, making their elections far less secure, which, by the way, Jesse, France figured out in 1975 when they decided to stop doing mail-in voting because it was rife with voter fraud. So all of these other first world civilized countries have decided that mail-in voting makes everything way more susceptible to voter fraud. And instead of learning from their past mistakes, we here in America, which is supposed to be another first world civilized country, we here in America have decided to go further in to mail-in voting. And so, Jesse, when you look at all of the ways that they have tried to manipulate and weaponize the system, when you look at the fact that the left constantly complains about expecting people to have voter ID is racist, let me tell you, first of all, it's inherently racist to assume that Black people are too stupid or too poor to get photo IDs. But the Republicans in Michigan actually passed a bill to expand free IDs, and Governor Gretchen Whitmer vetoed it. So you tell me what possible reason you would have if you weren't trying to intentionally game the system to veto an opportunity for everyone to have ID accessible to them. I mean, it just, it stinks to high heaven. And by the way, 80% of people agree on voter ID laws. This is something that is bipartisan. We all can all agree we want our elections to be more secure. We just have to get these deep state actors to, you know, follow through with all of these things. Stop weaponizing, stop rigging the game. And oh yeah, stop including dead people on the voter rolls.
That actually is going to be my next question. It's obviously, it's a joke passed around in GOP right-wing circles like mine. Ah, I'm sure after I die, I'll vote Democrat. You know, we've all said or heard things like that. But this is much more than a joke, isn't it, Sarah? What did you find out?
It is. We found that there are at least 25,000 dead Michigan voters who are still on the rolls, and they have been brought to the attention of Secretary of State Benson, who has continued to refuse to do nothing to remove these dead voters. I visited their tombstones, Jesse. Some of them died, 1997. I mean, we are not talking about recent deaths. We are talking about people who have been dead for decades that still exist on the voter rolls. And the Public Interest Legal Foundation has found that some of them have actually, many of them have actually voted, which of course we know was not actually them raising from the dead to go vote for Joe Biden, who actually, as it turns out, is also dead. But these are dead voters who have their ballots being mailed to their old locations, their old addresses, and someone is filling that out and turning it in. And when you're talking about an election that could potentially only be won by a very slim margin, all of these votes actually matter. And so as much as the left likes to say this isn't actually happening, as much as the right likes to joke about, if you're Democrat, you vote even after you're dead, this is something that we are seeing happen. And when we're talking about a swing state that is as critical as Michigan, it is so important to get this right. I mean, Jesse, one more stat for you. We've got 105% voter registration in Michigan. We have way more voters in the state of Michigan than are actually exist. So we've got to fix it. We've got to make it clean. That's assuming that even 100% of adults are registered to vote. We know that they're not. That's how bad it is over in the state of Michigan. Mathematically, it doesn't make sense. And I know the RNC is currently suing Michigan, and I know the Public Interest Legal Foundation is currently suing Michigan, but we have got to get this right, and we're running out of time.
Sarah, who films you when you're driving in a car? Because I noticed in that documentary there was some B-roll or whatever of you driving. Now, we both know you're a woman, so that's touch and go anyway. Where is the cameraman? It looks like he's on the hood. Is he beside you? Don't you find that distracting?
Yeah, it was a little bit of both, actually. The team that I worked with, they are just top-notch. Grade A, they're awesome. And so at one point he was actually hanging on for dear life outside of the car, hanging on to the car door, filming me. And he at a certain point was like, oh, this is the money shot. I'm getting this. And I was deathly afraid that I was going to kill him. But it ended up all right. And I think that it turned out to be a pretty great shot. So everything's fine.
You should have gave him a little brake check just to see how good his grip was hanging on there. All right, Sarah, before I let you go, I have to ask you about this Supreme Court ruling for today. 9-0, it's an abortion pill ruling. Should I be celebrating or pulling what's left of my hair out?
I mean, I think that the opinion written by Justice Kavanaugh was at least enough to leave the door open for the right challengers to sue, because this that we saw was just basically the technicality that they didn't prove that they had the legal standing to sue. It wasn't that all of the justices agreed that there isn't an inherent problem with this abortion pill. It was just that these particular plaintiffs didn't, you know, rise to the threshold that was required by the Constitution. And that's why you saw this unanimous decision. So I do think that they left the door open for the right case to be heard. And certainly I think that at a certain point, we're going to have to solve the problem that roughly one in every 25 women who take this pill end up in the emergency room. This is a very, very dangerous pill. And for people who claim that they care about women, they are certainly putting them more at risk of death or serious injury by allowing them to just get this pill in the mail without an in-office, you know, doctor's visit. So I do think I wouldn't be too upset about it, just in the sense that I think that if we get the right lawsuit, perhaps we can make changes. But certainly this should push everyone to tell legislators and tell whoever the president is at the time that we need reform in the FDA, because essentially that is where the blame is.
No doubt. Just get rid of the stupid agency. Sarah, thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to talk about the U.S. of Gay with Joy Pullman next. She's got a book out. It's pretty interesting stuff. She's got some interesting stuff to say. Before we get to Joy, you know, Father's Day's here. Well, it's not here, but it's almost here. Whatever. It's almost Father's Day. You know what your dad wants for Father's Day? He wants you to stop supporting garbage commie cell phone companies. I know. I can read his mind from here. He's probably laying in bed right now, waking up from a nap. He's thinking to himself, man, I wish my kid didn't have Verizon. That company's trash. You see, Pure Talk is wonderful. The American cell phone company. They're so American, they hire Americans who speak English. You know what it's like to talk to somebody on the phone who speaks and understands English? No more talking to Click in Zimbabwe or wherever he is. Pure Talk, baby. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Save a bunch of money. Speak English. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I want you to picture this. I want you to picture 9/11, that terrible day it happens. And let's say you're a patriotic young man and you decide you're going to sign up and go fight for your country. Maybe you join the Marines. You go fight. Maybe you get out after 4-8 years. Maybe you've got an injury. You need some medical care. And so after you're out, you have to go to the VA. And let's say you stop by the VA in Northport, New York. Well, if you're there receiving care as you stride up to the VA, you'll be greeted by a pride flag that's approximately double the size of the American flag you actually fought for. If you're one of those veterans, how does that make you feel? What you fought for and what's become of it. It freaking disgusts me is what it makes me feel like. Joining me now, Joy Pullman, executive editor of The Federalist. Also, she wrote a book on a lot of this stuff. You need to read it if you want to understand what you're looking at. It's called False Flag. Joy, I got to be honest, I'm freaking grossed out. Maybe I'm just 42 and I'm just a mean old curmudgeon at this point in time. I'm so tired of being grossed out by my country.
I mean, I'm right there with you, Jesse, and thank you for having me on. I love your show, follow it all the time. This is super exciting for me. We'll skip past that. Maybe that's gross too. And I think the grossness is that absolutely. I mean, I have at least a whole chapter in the book talking about how many of our ruling class really think that the United States Constitution is epitomized by the pride flag, by the sexual behavior that it stands for, by the fake rights that it stands for that are erasing the Constitution. And the truth is that the people who support the pride flag, you know, these people explicitly say that they want to end heteronormativity. You know what that means? That means making the norm to be someone who is not a heterosexual. These people are not looking for tolerance. They're looking for conquest and submission. And we have a lot of our top ruling leaders, including those of our military, acting like that is the whole point of the United States, the freedoms that you know, men in uniform are fighting for. When we all know that that is a replacement constitution, that is a false constitution, a regime change that is displacing the original one that most people, and in fact, all the patriots, you know, are the one, that's what they really want. They want that original constitution that's being displaced with this regime change that's epitomized by that pride flag.
Joy, one of the things that hits me is how fast all this happened, which is another reason why I'm glad you wrote the book. I hate to make myself sound old, but life was normal when I was a kid, and that's not ancient history. Now you want to turn on the new Star Wars thing, they're going to gay that thing up. You can't turn on the television anymore, everything's got to be gay. You can't go to third grade social studies without some whack job teacher telling you to chop your penis off. It's all over the place. How did it happen so fast? How did this conquering religion gain so much ground so quickly? What were we doing when they were doing all this?
Well, the gay jihad did not happen overnight, and the people perceive that, but it actually has been a very long time building. So I go through in my book actually tracing the antecedents of this all the way back to Woodrow Wilson and FDR, progressives' so-called living constitution, which really is no constitution at all. You know, they created the origin of group rights in order to supplant our individual liberties that are supposed to be secured by that constitution. So as writers like Christopher Caldwell have pointed out, the United States has essentially been living with two constitutions for maybe a century now. And we're seeing that the progressives' living constitution is epitomized again by the pride flag, by sexual depravity and the sexual politics and into everything. You know, that constitution, so-called, is overtaking our original one. So I talk about in the book, I go through the entire Bill of Rights, and I show how sexual politics erases every single one of them, including the Second Amendment rights. You know, there's efforts, of course, by the Biden administration to be, erasing guns because, of course, they're a threat to specifically gay people. So everywhere that you don't think sexual politics could possibly apply, that's already being done, partly thanks to Neil Gorsuch and his Bostock decision, which gave the Biden administration a pretext to do what they were going to do already, which is transgender every single thing that the federal government can get its hands on, which at that point is pretty much everything.
Yeah, thanks for that, Neil. Joy, what do these people want? Is it just about destroying the family? That's how I've always taken it, all the LGBTQ filth. What it does really is it shatters the families. People aren't creating families. You got 25% of young people now who are gay. So that's men not marrying women and making babies, which wrecks a country. Is that all it's about?
Yes, I mean, I think that's directly what it's about, because the natural family, the biological family, is the institution that creates society. First of all, it is the institution that from its authority, the existence of government proceeds. So if you destroy the family, then you can control the entire culture. You know, a natural family is, you know, autonomous. It creates itself. Naturally, you put a man and woman together, they make babies together. You don't do that if you put a man and a man together or a woman and a woman together. There is no family created by their intersection. So a natural family is self-creating and autonomous, and it provides for most of its own needs. People who have a natural functioning family embedded ideally within a, you know, greater extended family, they don't have a lot of need for the government. And so people who want to have a totalitarian government, who want the government to be your mother and your father and your brother and your sister and your neighbor and your aunt and your uncle, they have to erase all of the people who are already filling those functions. And that's your family. And we're, as you point out, you know, we're well on our way there. People who don't have brothers, sisters, aunts, and uncles, they're alienated, they're isolated, they're lonely. They have nothing to identify with, especially, you know, now that our country is something they're not allowed to identify with. They're not allowed to be patriots. America is hated. You know, so all of the things that give people a natural identity have been erased, as the scholar Mary Eversat points out. And, you know, I talk about her in my book. So tearing people away from everything that used to give them roots leaves them ripe for replacing that with, guess what, government. And government is not only, you know, your daddy and your mother and your brother and your sister for the leftists, it's also their God.
Joy, I don't want to only focus on the negative, but are parents waking up? It seems like they are waking up slowly, maybe not as fast as you or I would prefer, but they are starting to catch on to this a little, right? After all, Target's yanking some of their gross tranny stuff. Of course, not in every store, but let's just take those chest binders out of our southern stores. So that tells me someone's feeling the heat, right?
Yeah, I do think there are there's a lot of parents noticing, because you almost you can't not notice. You know, everywhere I walk, I not just in June now, but all around the year, right? Not just Target, Walmart, go into the Michael's craft store. Thankfully, it's not in Hobby Lobby, so that's where I shop for my crafts now. But like basically everywhere you go, you have displays that are basically requiring you to teach. I have a six-year-old. You know, she says, she hasn't said this to me because I don't take her there, but right, the concern about, she could say to me, Mommy, what's queer? I'm not explaining that to my six-year-old. She doesn't need to know about sex. She's six. So I do think a lot of parents have gotten aware of just the fact that it's being shoved in our face and our throats all the time. But I, you know, Jesse, I followed you for a long time, like I've said, and I agree with you. People need to wake up more and harder. And unfortunately, for too many Americans, I hate to say this, but you know, our own peace and prosperity is almost an obstacle to people doing that. You know, because I want people to be out with their families, enjoying ball games, enjoying the summer. But they don't understand that while, you know, they're sleeping, everything that creates a possibility for having ball games and relaxation and nice, you know, nice times in their backyard with their kids, those are all being eroded by people who hate them and literally want to come get their children. So, you know, parents need to wake up harder and faster than things are, because this revolution is marching on.
No, that's a fact. While we're enjoying time with our families, they are attacking them. We just can't see it. The book is False Flag. I want everyone to go pick it up, especially parents. You want to know what's out there and why all this filth is out there. False Flag. Joy, you are the best. You come back anytime, please. All right. Yeah, Father's Day coming. It's a wonderful day, mainly because I'm a father now, and I intend to be spoiled on that day. And I've already told my family. I already sat them down, and I said, listen, I expect breakfast in bed, and I expect a cup of blackout coffee with it. I don't want any excuses, and I don't want some garbage commie coffee. I have blackout coffee stocked up in my house, and I want a cup of blackout coffee for Father's Day. Do you want a precious Father's Day like that? With a patriotic coffee company that actually loves you, shares your values? In fact, I told my kids last night, I want one of the blackout coffee mugs with the American flag on it. 20% off your first order. blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse. Go pick some up. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're going into Father's Day weekend, and this is, of course, a great weekend. Why? Because it's all about me. No, quit. It's about America's dads, and America's dads matter a lot. I realized in this feminized American society we have now, dads are just supposed to be the big dumb oaf who can't tie his shoes. But actually, men have a much more important role than that to play. Joining me now, my friend Alec Lace, host of the First Class Fatherhood podcast, which I really enjoy, and I think you would really enjoy as well. Alec, you know, we talk a lot specifically about things like crime, you know, crime in American cities. And too many people can't trace that back to dads or the lack thereof. And that's amazing to me, because there's a direct line between those things, isn't there?
Yeah, you're right on with that. And how you doing, Jesse? And happy Father's Day to you. There is a direct line. You know what's interesting, Jesse, is we hear President Biden constantly talking about the gun problem, right? How many times have we heard him talk about that in the last 3.5 years? We got to stop the gun violence, guns this. He never makes this link, right? Here's a recent study. Individuals from fatherless homes are 279% more likely to carry guns than kids that grow up in a two-parent household. He never makes this connection, okay? So also, too, you have fatherless kids are 3 to 20 times more likely to be incarcerated than kids that grow up in a two-parent household. But we never hear that when we're reporting crime statistics, or especially talking about guns. You try to make this correlation, and, you know, 50 years ago, the same percentage of homeowners owned guns as they do in America today. The difference is those same homes don't have fathers in them anymore. That has gone up 3.5-4 times the amount of dads that are absent from these homes now. And that's the correlation. You want to stop the gun violence. You want to stop crime. You got to get dads back in the home. And so we celebrate fatherhood this weekend, Father's Day. You know what? We could use a Father's Day month. How about a month of Father's Day instead of one day, and get rid of the Pride Month. Make June about dads instead of give Pride Month one day. Give the fathers the whole month, right? We could do that for a lot of other things. Veterans Day too, and Memorial Day. We could use a whole month of these things instead of Pride.
Yeah, we sure could. We sure could. Alec, it wasn't always this way when it comes to fatherlessness here in America. I was watching some documentary on actually the Bloods and the Crips, you know, those two black gangs, L.A., always doing battle. And they dropped an amazing statistic in that clip that in the 70s, we're talking still segregation, really, in the 70s, the average black child had a 75% chance of being raised in a two-parent home. This is when black people were getting treated like crap. And they had fathers in the home. And today that number is something like 33%. This isn't only black people, obviously, without fatherless home or with fatherless homes. How did this happen? What changed? What shattered the home?
You know, what's interesting, Jesse, is Congressman Byron Donalds was just recently doing an interview with Jesse Jackson over comments he made about this exact point. Now, he talked about during the 50s and during the Jim Crow era that black families were intact, more together than they are now. So they honed in on that word. And so Al Sharpton was trying to pin him to the wall to say, you're saying that Jim Crow was better for black people. And that's not what Congressman Donalds was trying to say. He was trying to pinpoint that even when America was more racist or more segregated, and it was worse for black people, their families were intact. You fast forward to today, where you have every opportunity in the world as a black man or black woman, a black family in this country, and the family has fell apart. So how did we get here? This started with this entire feminist movement. It started with Lyndon B. Johnson, with all of this civil rights movement. This whole thing destroyed the family. What they did was they got women addicted to the government. They got single moms, which is their number one client that's on the welfare system. So you have women that are co-parenting with the government, and this cycle continues, and it's a rotten cycle. People never come out of this system, and you have kids that are growing up without a dad in the home. It was so important for the Marxist ideology and for this leftist, progressive, communist ideology to get the dad out of the home, and they have gotten the dad out of the home. And unless we can get him back in the home, unless we can put faith in our families again, unless we can get that foundation back together again, there's no shot to make America great again. You cannot have a great country without a great family. It doesn't work. It all starts in the home. Without the family, the whole thing falls apart. It's the foundation of the entire nation.
How do we do that, Alec? Because it seems like such a large problem, but I mean, large problems just take more time to fix. How do we get America, Americans, men and women, back in love with the notion of a family, a man marrying a woman, making babies, having a good life? How do we get Americans back in love with that?
You can't begin to start that process unless you bring exposure to it. We have to start talking about this. Just like we said here, Joe Biden, he never makes the correlation when he talks about gun violence. Doesn't make the correlation that this is coming from primarily fatherless kids. So we have to talk about it, for one. But Jesse, this is not something that's going to happen next week, next month, next year. This took 50 years to unravel. It's going to take a long time to put it back together. So number one, we have to be there for these kids that are growing up without fathers. We have to give them mentors. We got to do things in the public school system to give programs to have male role models in the classrooms with these kids, to have courses to take care of these kids. So we got to help them out. And then we got to prevent this problem from happening in the future. But with everybody looking so down on marriage, so down on the family, it's going to be very hard to do. So first, we got to expose it. Second, we got to help the kids that are fatherless right now. And third, we got to work on preventing it in the future by changing this narrative, changing this mindset on fatherhood and family life. You know, Harrison Bucker tried to do this, and they slaughtered the guy for it. They hammered this guy because of the comments that he made. And they had to do that because what he did directly upset that Marxist ideology. They cannot have a man out there gaining traction because that hurts them in their destruction of the family. So we have to start amplifying voices like a Harrison Buckner if we want to have a shot at trying to restore the family. So it's going to take major efforts on every The university's got to be involved. Entertainment industry got to be involved. At every level that destroyed the family has got to be involved in picking up the pieces and restoring it again. So it comes from all of these things. The family court system is another one. Everyone was on Harrison Buckner. The two things that they were saying is, the man is this, or the woman just should stay in the home. And they were all mad about that. And they're saying the woman's not just the primary caretaker of the kid. The woman could be a boss woman. Well, where is the boss woman in the family court system? When you go to the family court system, they say, no, the mother is the primary caregiver. The father pays alimony. 97% of all alimony in the country is paid by men. So if we're supposed to be equal, why isn't there equal alimony being paid in the court system? In the eyes of the court, they tell you, no, the mother is the primary caregiver of the kid and the father brings home the bacon. But yet when Harrison Buckner said it, everyone was all upset. So there's a big problem in the family court system with this stuff as well, Jesse.
Yeah, no doubt there is. That's a whole nother show. In fact, you and I are going to talk about that in more depth. Next time, I'm out of time. Alec, you are the best, brother. Happy Father's Day to you, my friend. All right. We have Light in the Mood coming up next. You know what your dad wants for Father's Day? He wants you to spend time with him if you can. Maybe send him a text if he's away or even a phone call. Hey, Dad, I love you. But you know what else your father wants for Father's Day? He wants a subscription to the First TV. I know. He reached out to me and told me. He said, that's all I want. Here's what you need to do. Go to thefirsttv.com/support and be a good child. Do you want to be a good child? thefirsttv.com/support. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I like to walk down memory lane every now and then, and it always makes me laugh when I look at the ridiculous cringe of politicians, mainly Democrats. They're the worst. It's not the Republicans can't be bad, but you remember when back when Elizabeth Warren, she wanted to be president, and so she was trying to do the normal thing. She was normalizing, as they say in politics, and so she does this video and she drops a, "I'm gonna get me a beer."
There we go. I'm glad for everybody who's joining this video. It's great to hear from you. Hold on a sec. I'm gonna get me a beer. Hey, Glover, my husband Bruce is now in here. You want a beer?
No, I'll pass on the beer for now.
You sure? Okay, say hello to folks.
Yes.
So, okay. This is my sweetie.
Hello.
He's the best. And I'm crazy. I love you too. Thank you for being here.
Pleasure.
I'm glad you're here.
Enjoy your beer.
Thank you for being here. It's his house. Okay, so maybe you thought that she's surely never going to do another one of those, right? Well, that's where you'd be wrong. She teamed up with that dirty commie Jennifer Granholm, and, well, here it is.
Cheers to a bright, clean energy future for Massachusetts.
Cheers to lowering energy costs.
Cheers to great new clean energy jobs for Massachusetts workers.
Cheers to investing in America.
And to beer.
Sorry. I can't. Just in case you thought I was always mean to Elizabeth Warren, though, let's do remember I was the one who encouraged her to run for president.
Love you.
Love your t-shirt.
Run for president, please.
Right now, we gotta be in this fight. Thank you.
Thank you so
much.
Thank
you. Take care.
Appreciate you. He's going down tonight.
Do you know what the front of my t-shirt said? You heard her tell me she loves my t-shirt. The front of my t-shirt said, "Keep your hands off my uterus." It was a gag, right? I love your shirt. Gosh, I'll see them all.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.